A well-paired wine can turn a good meal into a memorable experience, and when we're ringing in a new year, a sparkling wine makes it even more special. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks for finishing out 2012 with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Choosing wine can seem tricky, but Jessica Bell is here to help. She's the founder of My Wine School, and she wants to make wine accessible and fun for all of us. Jessica, it's always a lot of fun to have you with us.
I'm always happy to be here.
And happy last day of 2012.
Yes, happy early New Year's
yes,
Eve.
There we go. Well, you know, I have a friend who lives in New Zealand, and so I always wake up on holidays, and she's already posted all kinds of pictures and stories and stuff. So,
and I'm sure they're drinking wine in New Zealand.
Yes. And so there are many people that are well into 2013 at this
right.
point.
And
in
they
the
have
game.
Great sparkling wine in New Zealand. They're just hard to find here, but they've got good ones.
Oh, that's good to know.
Have her send you some,
or maybe I could just go there and ask
even
them.
Better.
Even better. Well, you know, it just seemed natural to talk about sparkling wines on New Year's Eve. What makes a sparkling wine sparkle?
Well, yeah, let's start by opening the bottle,
right?
And this is actually a good bit of a mini lesson on for tonight. When you're opening a bottle of sparkling wine, you know, I just tell people get the foil off any way you can. If you're a sommelier, you can be pretty about it and do the right cuts, and then you got the turnkey, which I think was a 5.5 turn.
Okay,
just a little trivia, and they're all made basically by the same producer, so they all have the same amount of turns.
And that's that little wire,
the cage, yep. Now, this is the thing that I think a lot of people don't know, is that you want to actually spin from the bottom. You don't spin the cork itself.
Oh, okay. So you hold the cork and spin the bottle.
Exactly.
So to speak.
Right. And very slowly, hopefully. And another thing is make sure it's well chilled. Now, the pressure you find in a bottle of sparkling wine is the same pressure you'll find in a tire on a double deck bus.
Okay.
So this is, I mean, it's a fun time, but you have to be careful with sparkling.
There's a lot of pressure.
There's a lot of pressure, and you just, you don't want, you just want smiles on New Year's
right.
Eve. You don't want anyone getting hurt.
So you don't want submissions for America's Funniest Home Videos.
No, definitely not. Yeah. And you want to keep your thumb or your hand on top of the cork because, like I said, there's a lot of pressure. And then you spin from the bottom, from the actual bottle. Now, when you do it, technically, you're not supposed to make any noise. And so as you spin the bottom of the bottles, I'm doing, this is radio, I know you can't see, but you actually use your wrist with the cork to tilt back and forth to edge it out.
Oh, okay.
And the reason you do that is you actually don't want to make a noise. You don't want to pop because you just spent all this money on sparkling wine. And when you let it pop, you're releasing a lot of that carbonation that you actually are paying for.
Ah, okay.
And we'll get to that later, mm-hmm. where that carbonation comes from. But because this is radio, I think we should let it pop
sure,
a little. But technically,
just a little.
There's our pop. So you know,
a satisfying little pop.
And you can see there's that little, it looks like steam, mm-hmm. or, you know,
like a little mist.
Yeah, mist. It's very romantic. Now, if it starts bubbling over, it looks pretty, but what that means is it's too warm.
Mm.
So yeah, give everyone a little sip and then put it back in the fridge or back in the ice and let it chill down some more. Because what's happening is there's so much carbonation that when at warmer temps, we're going to have more explosion of that carbonation. So definitely put it back in the fridge. But for now, we're going to put it in the glass.
There we go.
And to your first question here, we'll see if we can get that.
Oh, very nice.
Yes, a little radio
sound.
Action
yes.
there. But to your first question, how do we get the bubbles in there? Now, most all sparkling wines are going to actually use a very natural method. Very few wines, sparkling wines, are going to use injection of carbonation. Even your Cook's that is $5 is not going to use injection of carbonation.
Okay.
So where do we get the bubbles? We get it from the grapes.
Okay.
And as though grapes weren't fantastic enough that they give us wine, now they're giving us bubbles. And to understand how that happens, you have to go back to what fermentation is and how it happens. So fermentation, very simply, is grape sugars are eaten by yeast.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two major things you need to make wine. Now, when the yeast eats the sugar in the grapes, you have alcohol, right? That's how we get our wine. And any kind of wine that you see, the Pinot Grigio or the Chardonnay without bubbles, is produced, and there isn't the capturing of the secondary byproduct, which is CO2.
Okay.
So fermentation.
Carbon dioxide.
Exactly. So fermentation, the grape sugar and the yeast combine to form alcohol, but also CO2. So all sparkling wine is wine being made, but the CO2, the carbon dioxide, being trapped. And so that the carbon dioxide has nowhere to go but back into the wine.
Okay.
So for most all of your sparkling wines that you're going to purchase, it's actually carbonated in a very natural way. Now, the differences you'll see in terms of style and price have to do with the region they're from, but also the way that they capture that carbon dioxide. The cheaper it is, usually the greater quantities that's done at one time. Mm-hmm. So we'll do a large tank and capture the CO2 or the carbon dioxide, and that will be a lesser expensive wine usually. Now, the one we have here and those expensive champagnes, they capture the carbon dioxide bottle by bottle. So a very small amount.
Oh, interesting.
Which creates a very labor-intensive process, which then you pay for. But now you got to keep in mind, it's not just for show to do it in a bottle. You get better quality bubbles and sparkling wine and flavors when the smaller the vessel is. So we're looking at big tanks mm-hmm. versus small bottles.
Well, and that's interesting because one of the things I've noticed is it seems that sometimes bubbles vary in size.
They do.
Pretty significantly from very, very tiny bubbles. You almost can't see, you know, the individual ones to something that's a little closer to the bubbles you think of as in like carbonated soda or something.
Exactly. And it sounds kind of silly, but if you do take a Coca-Cola, for instance, and then, you know, $15, $20, $30 sparkling wine, you put them next to each other, you're going to see a dramatic difference in the size of the bubbles, the amount of bubbles, the streams of the bubbles, how consistent they are. Mm-hmm. These are all things that, you know, the wine experts look for before they taste mm-hmm. the wine in trying a glass of champagne. Now, don't freak your friends out tonight and, you know, play the wine snob, but you can. And tonight, you can look at your sparkling wine and take note, especially of different types of sparkling wines. You'll start to see that the appearance of these different sparkling wines have different sized bubbles. And that translates into texture. It translates into how smooth the wine is. It also has something to do with the flavors. Not the bubbles don't have flavors, but the smaller the size of the bubble indirectly would suggest that it used a process that was more time intensive. Hmm. Which would contribute more complex flavors. So then, hence, you get a more expensive sparkling wine. That's the theory of it. You can find some lesser expensive sparkling wines that still have that great complexity. Mm-hmm. Usually the size of the bubbles is one indicator of quality.
We're talking with Jessica Bell of My Wine School, and you can find My Wine School at mywineschool.com. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in today for New Year's Eve for Larry Mueller. On The Larry Mueller Show, we are talking about sparkling wines, and you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show, and Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Sometimes Larry forgets that not everyone knows how to spell Mueller, and it can be hard to find. So M-E-I-L-L-E-R. And we'd love to hear from you. Do you plan to pop open some bubbly to ring in the new year this evening? Do you know exactly what you'll serve, or would you like a recommendation from Jessica? And if you enjoy sparkling wines, do you prefer dry or sweet? And if you have a favorite to share, we would love to hear about that too. So should we try this lovely sparkling wine?
Yes, this is a sparkling wine. And I keep saying sparkling wine because this is another interesting topic in the world of bubbles, is that we tend to use the word champagne as though we use it like Kleenex, right? Kleenex is a brand. It's a specific brand. But, you know, we'll walk in, do you have a Kleenex? It's used, people know what we mean. So the same thing is true for champagne. People know what you say when you say champagne. You're thinking sparkling wine. But legally speaking, champagne can only come from a very specific area within France.
The Champagne region.
The Champagne region, exactly. So it's been used to a point now where it's a part of our vernacular to interchange it with sparkling wine. But when you start to look at labels, you'll see that champagne can only be used on bottles that come from that northern winemaking region in France. Mm-hmm. Now, there are exceptions. It wasn't until 2005 that the U.S. agreed to protect that in the United States, whereas in Europe, it was protected all the way back to, some say 1891, the Treaty of Madrid. Others say the Treaty of Versailles after World War I. The point being is that it's been protected a lot longer mm-hmm. in Europe. Whereas in America, just in 2005, we said, okay, we'll respect that that is a region-specific name. And so other U.S. producers have been grandfathered in. Hmm. So, for instance, Korbel can put California champagne on their labels.
Interesting.
But they're one of the onlys because they were grandfathered in. So obviously, we know that it's not from France if it's California. It's simple geography right. there, right? But because they've been, they were doing it for almost 150 years, they've been grandfathered in.
So you can always still look for a product of France on the label if you
right.
want to make sure
it's actual champagne.
Well, we've talked about how to taste other kinds of wines before, but is there anything special about how you want to first taste a champagne?
Yeah, as we were alluding to before, definitely take a look at champagne or sparkling wine because, you know, it is pretty. Mm-hmm. And it really, I think it's those bubbles that make us want to celebrate and use it for celebration. Mm-hmm. A little bit of trivia here. The region of Champagne was the region of the coronation of kings for hundreds of years. So it's it doesn't come as a surprise that we might think of champagne as a celebratory drink. Mm-hmm. But also, I think the bubbles are part of that. They make you feel happy, you
right.
know? And later, they'll literally make you feel a little happy. But not too much, because then the next morning, you will not feel happy. So yes, you want to take a look at the appearance. And just, you know, you don't have to get all crazy geeky about it. But mm-hmm. just, you know, the more you appreciate what you do ingest, the more you're going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the nose, you don't have to swirl it. Now, you know, anytime there's a wine glass in my hand, I just automatically swirl. Mm-hmm. It's just habit. But sparkling wine is carbonated, so the aromas are already being pushed up to your
right.
nose, if
right.
you will. So, and as you swirl it, you would actually start to lose some of that carbonation. You would be increasing the speed at which the wine is going to go flat. So you really don't want to swirl it. But definitely take a smell. Champagnes are going to be more on the side of citrus fruits and some bready, toasty notes. So maybe they say some mineral notes. Mm-hmm. Whereas once you start to get into some new world, like America and South America and New Zealand, you're going to get more fruity notes on the wines. And then, of course, take a sip, the fun part. Judith, you go. I'm going to talk. And what you're going to see on most sparkling wines is they make your mouth water.
Hmm.
And what that is, it's acid. It's like the acid in a lemon. And the reason is that most sparkling wines need acid to not only to taste good,
mm-hmm.
Carbonation just tastes better at a high acid level, but that low pH, which is an inverse of
right.
high acid, is going to keep the wine stable.
Hmm.
So you need high acid in champagne, which is also another reason why we see it before the meal often. It gets your mouth going, ready
right,
for
right.
food. But I think it's underutilized as a food wine. These wines are fantastic, not only before dinner and just for celebration, but also throughout dinner. They really have a great ability to stand up to lots of different foods.
Well, I have to say, so color-wise, this is a lovely pale yellow, but a rich yellow,
mm-hmm.
and until I started sipping it, there was a nice ring of very small bubbles and a stream of bubbles going straight up. Almost, it looks like it's coming out of the stem,
right?
It's going
right.
straight up, and it is. It's a very. It did get my mouth watering, and I'm tasting it so high in my palate. It's mm-hmm. it's all in the upper half of my mouth. It feels like.
Yeah, you're getting all that acid. I mean, it really. You can feel it on the sides of your cheeks. That's where your salivary glands mm-hmm. are. So, if you tonight take a sip of your sparkling wine, and you're gonna feel immediately that your mouth comes alive. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're just gonna start to feel the actual saliva flowing. If you tune into it, you will feel mm-hmm. that. Definitely. And that remark on the bubbles coming from the glass. They actually tend to come from imperfections in the glass.
Oh.
So a couple things about your glassware tonight. Make sure there's no soap in it. No residual soap, because that will kill your bubbles almost immediately. So if you don't have bubbles when you pour, you might have a flat wine, but you also might have some glassware that still has some soap residue. Also, there's some wine glasses, like say from Riedel, that actually laser etches in imperfections into their glasses to have more symmetric beads.
So it basically designs where the bubbles
exactly
will go.
So it just goes to show, you know, that if you start to learn a little bit about the ins and outs of sparkling wine, you can start to see why things happen and what's going on in your glass.
We are talking with Jessica Bell of My Wine School. You can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. We are talking about sparkling wines and champagnes with Jessica Bell of My Wine School, perfect for ringing out 2012 and ringing in the new year. And we'll be happy to take your questions when you call 800-642-1234. And we will get to a couple of folks that are online. But Jessica, you wanted to mention something about this lovely sparkling wine that we just tasted.
Sure.
Or I just tasted it.
Right. So this, I snuck in a sip too. So this actually, what I've got here is called Gruet. It's spelled G-R-U-E-T. And the reason I brought it in, it's one of my go-to for good value sparkling wines. It is not champagne, meaning it does not come from the region of Champagne in France, but it is from a champagne family. They came from Champagne, and they are using the champagne method, so that labor-intensive, expensive way of making sparkling wine. In fact, on their label, it says Méthode Champenoise, which I can't speak French, but I do know means the champagne method. So they are telling you that they're using the same method that's used in Champagne. Now, I told Judith on break that this is actually illegal to do in Europe. Méthode Champenoise is also protected under EU law, and only champagne producers can use that. Here in the U.S., we only protect champagne, not Méthode Champenoise. What people should be using or is legal in Europe is something called traditional method. When you see traditional method, it's the same method as the champagne are using. So look for that. You can look for champagne method or traditional method. And so this one is, it has a lot of hallmarks of a champagne, but at a $15 price point, which is, I recommended it to my sister for her wedding. So obviously,
well,
I think it's a good value.
Well, and you said it's made in Albuquerque.
Oh, that's the kicker. Look at the label, Judith.
This
looks very champagne-like, right? It's actually made in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which you think, oh, please, I am not trying that wine. But let me tell you, they produce it at 4,300 feet in elevation. So you have extremely cool climate, which you need for good sparkling wine. And the soils are the same geological origins, similar geological origins as champagne.
So then you get that same mineral.
You get that mineral. And then they use the exact same grapes and process as the champagne. So they have a lot of similarities. It's not going to be champagne, but for a $15 price point, it is a great value. It almost every year gets Best Buy from somebody. It gets 90 points if you're in, if that's important.
Right.
But it's a great one to look for. And you can probably find it at almost any supermarket, if not more of a specialty retail grocery store.
And again, it's Gruet. It's G-R-U-E-T. So great. Well, let's go to the phones because we have some folks that would like to join our sparkling conversation.
I wish they could drink with
us, too. Yeah, I do, too. Douglas in Chicago. Hi, Douglas.
Hi, Jessica. Happy New Year.
Hi, Douglas. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I hope you had a great holiday.
I did. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. I wanted to ask you about the length of time that the bubbles stay as bubbles, is that any indication of quality?
Yeah, it can be. Now, I'll caveat that with, okay, so first off, yes, it can be, because the longer the maturation processes. I'm just going to, I'm not going to use the French words or anything, but the longer that maturation process of creating a sparkling wine, the smaller the bubbles are. Usually they do it at a cooler temp, and so you get smaller and more bubbles. So yes, in essence, yes. That I'll caveat with, though, if a wine has been sitting on a shelf for a couple years, it's going to start to go flat slowly. So you could have had a really, on release, a very good bottle of sparkling wine, but it sat for a while. So now it doesn't have as much sparkling in it. And that sometimes will affect quality, sometimes not. It depends. It depends bottle to bottle. But in theory, yes, it should indicate higher quality. Now, Douglas, I will caveat that also with, though, quality and style are two different things. If you love minerally toasty wines, then maybe you're looking at the Champagne region. But if you like more fruity wines, then it won't matter how good the wine is. You don't like that style. So you're going to look for maybe more of like a Prosecco or a New World sparkling wine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jessica. It's great talking with you.
Good to hear from you. Happy New Year.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks, okay. Douglas. And actually, going right along with that, on the Facebook page, Jen asked, does sparkling wine keep well? I have a bottle of sparkling Shiraz that's been in my cool pantry for 2 years. Is it likely to taste good tonight?
Open it. No, it probably, you know what I tell people? Open it. And, it's better to err on the side of too early. And it won't, I promise you, it won't be too early on your sparkling Shiraz. But I tell people, just open it, and it's very rare that a wine is going to hurt you. It's on its way to vinegar, okay? So it's not, unless it's faulted for some other reason, really, you're not going to get sick from it unless you drink too much of it, right?
That's always the caveat, right?
So you definitely open it. Now, sparkling wines in general are meant to be opened, I would say 99% of them, as soon as possible. What happens is the sparkling wine producers create the sparkle in the wines, and then they keep them fresh at the winery. And then a lot of them will bottle them according to orders, and they'll bottle them throughout the year. Hmm. Most of your sparkling wines are not based on what we call a vintage or a year. They're what we call non-vintage. Mm-hmm. And so they'll bottle them to keep them fresh. Almost all of your sparkling wines are meant to be drunk as soon as possible. Now, there are that small percentage of vintage sparkling wines, which means it comes from 1 year. Those, I don't know the number, but I couldn't imagine more than a point of a percent in the grand scheme of sparkling wines out there. Those, even though, should not be kept very long. They won't even be released until 4, 5, 6 years after the vintage date. And most say don't keep them more than 10 years. So you really only have a very short window of aging it before you start to lose a lot of what they're made to deliver.
So if in general you don't have the patience to age your wine,
this is the
go
perfect,
with the sparkling
wine. Yeah, if you can't wait, sparkling wine is your wine.
Great. All right. Carol in Madison is next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. You've answered so many questions already.
Oh, good.
Okay. And it's about some old, I know there's dandelion wine and rhubarb and elderberry wine in the basement that a former tenant had made. And I probably, maybe 15 years ago, it's been on its side on the shelf. And but what you already answered is the sparkling one that I opened at one point was probably the last of the sparkling.
Okay.
It probably doesn't sparkle anymore. And if I open one, it won't poison me, but it might be vinegar.
Yeah. And so these are homemade wines made, you said, from dandelion. And they've been down there for 10 years, you said?
At least 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Those, I can't imagine, are... I would almost, for those, because they're homemade, I would almost recommend, I'm sorry, but not trying them. Because I don't want to be on the hook for trying something like that.
Well, and because if it was commercially produced,
exactly.
You know that there are certain things in place
standard,
for safety.
Yeah. Right. And I don't know what the level of alcohol is. The thing is with grapes, they have a certain level of acid. They have a certain level of alcohol, which are all things that help protect us from the bacteria. So like, let's say your homemade wine is only a 5% or the acid is low. Like that's out of my territory, and I would not want to be on the hook for it.
You probably don't want to risk it.
Yeah, I would say get a second opinion, and this, you know, but that one I wouldn't try.
So maybe, Carol, go out and get some brand new sparkling wine for tonight.
You got it.
Okay, thanks for that call.
Thanks,
it's
Carol.
Always good to check. And Alan in St. Paul is next. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I shared a bottle of sparkling wine from Oregon with the winemaker, who is an older man who's now deceased, unfortunately. And he remarked that he always took a knife and scratched an X in the very bottom of the inside of the wine glass. because he believed that that caused bubbles to rise up exactly from the center of the bottom.
Exactly.
And, is that, can you comment on that?
Yep, that's going back to something we mentioned in passing, right?
Right,
Jessica?
Yeah. At the beginning of the program, we were saying that actually some wine glass producers will laser etch in imperfections, if you will, in their glasses in order to encourage the beads of bubbles to form, because beads of bubbles will usually form where there is an imperfection or something in the glass. Now, I would say I'd be careful about doing it yourself, a DIY, because then you have got glass shards.
Right.
I don't
want to be giving ground glass to your guests.
No, right. But what the winemaker in Oregon was doing has merit, and you know, just look at probably the most well-known wine glass producer in the world, Riedel, and they do it. But they do it, you know, obviously commercially. So yes, there is merit to that. I would just be careful with all that, especially with sparkling wine being consumed.
Right, right. So if you can find them already etched, perhaps the way to go. Great. Thanks for that call, Alan. And you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We're talking about sparkling wines with Jessica Bell, our sparkling guest from My Wine School. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Miller. And Jessica, you touched on some of the things like saying méthode champenoise and things like that. There are other things on a label that might not be familiar to people. So let's talk a little bit about what we might see on the label of a sparkling wine. One of the most common is Brut or Sec or Grand Cru.
Right. So this is interesting. So Brut, you'll see that a lot. What that means is dry. You're going to get a dry sparkling wine. Now, what's really confusing is the word sec on
which
a spark.
Which means dry.
Which means dry is actually a lot sweeter than Brut.
Okay.
So you've got, in the Brut family, you've got a couple of things. You've got Brut Nature or Brut Zero, which is the lowest amount of sugar. So if you really want to steer clear of sugar in your sparkling wine, you can look for Brut Nature. Then you've got Brut, and then you've got also Extra Brut. And so that has Extra Brut, in theory, is going to be a little bit drier than Brut, in theory. Okay. The reason why I say in theory is because there actually is numbers of grams per liter of sugar that can go in. So Brut is 12 grams per liter or less. Mm-hmm. Okay. The thing is that you don't know how much they're putting in, 0 to 12, but also you have to keep in mind that sparkling wine is very acidic, like we said. Acid and sugar balance each mm-hmm. other. So, for instance, champagne is extremely acidic. Extremely acidic from the region of France and Champagne. Very acidic. So if you have 10 grams of sugar, it might taste drier than a wine from, say, a warmer region, which has lower acid, mm-hmm. which only has 2 grams of sugar.
Because there's not that canceling out effect.
Exactly. So you just so just keep that in mind. So, you know, when you go to ask for, I know I have to have Brut Nature. I don't want any, sugar in it. But you might have some other wines that have mm-hmm. no sugar in it and they just say Brut. But then the confusing part is that dry is actually, or demi-sec or, mm-hmm. Half dry or mm-hmm. semi-dry. Those are all sweet.
Okay.
Those are going to be probably sweeter than your average Riesling. I wouldn't say they're dessert wines yet, but they're pretty sweet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any idea why they call it sec when sec means dry?
No, that's a good question, right? Anyone knows that?
Be...
Yes. I'm trying to think why, just off the top of my head here, if I've got any intuition on that. But no, I'll have to keep thinking about that one.
And then we had also mentioned Grand Cru. And what does that mean?
So when you see Grand Cru and Premier Cru, so that means great growth or first growth, those are coming from specific sites, usually within Champagne, that are designated as high quality areas for making the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And those are usually going to come at a premium price. So those are going to be, at least $50+ mm-hmm. for the Grand Cru, Premier Cru. And that's what they're trying to tell you. Once you get outside of Champagne, that terminology isn't protected as much by law. So you just have to be a little bit careful about what's going
on. So it means more if you see it on a Champagne.
Right. And France,
label.
Too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you had wanted to mention rosé.
Rosé, yeah. I just wanted to mention that because it's a very, in the last, I'd say, 7 to 8 years, it's a very popular new niche in sparkling wine. So much that a lot of the producers struggle to keep up with the demand.
Mm.
They're a bit more difficult to find. And because of that supply-demand relationship, you'll also find them being a bit more expensive than their, say, non-rosé blend. And what's interesting about rosé sparkling wine, so this is really interesting, in all of the world of wine, when you get a rosé wine, usually it's because it has abbreviated contact with red skins. That's where you get your color.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting a pink color from adding red and white wine together. That's actually against the law in most countries. Now, in Champagne, there and in France, and most other places that make sparkling rosé, a lot of times they add red to white wine to make it. So it's, again, Champagne has all these, you know, like, well, we've got special things that apply to us. So that's one. The other is that we were talking about the sweetness levels. They can actually add in sugar, water, if you will, at the end of the process to make it sweeter.
Hmm.
Whereas nowhere else really, definitely nowhere else in Europe and usually in the rest of the world, can you add in sugar to make it sweet. Usually you get the sweetness in your wines from the grape sugars that just were not fermented to alcohol. So it's Champagne has all these exceptions that makes it an unusual, I think an unusual wine of production.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unusual region, and there's unusual regions that make it. But what really makes it so special to me is everything that goes in to make it the final product that it is.
We talked about how to serve champagne or sparkling wine. Phil in Crystal Lake has a question that goes to the other end, whether you can keep it once it's been open. So let's go to Phil. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Thanks.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, if we open a bottle of champagne, there's just two of us, should we drink the whole bottle at one time? Or?
Yes. No, I would say, okay, if you want to, it's virtually impossible to get your cork. No, it is impossible to get your cork into the bottle again. In fact, this is another piece of trivia for all you out there. The champagne cork that looks like a mushroom actually starts like a cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the pressure exerted on that cork that creates that mushroom shape. Now, another thing, when you do open it, what you want to see is that mushroom shape. So here, I've got the cork here. You've got the round top and then the mushroom shape
right,
at the
bottom. Right, it
flares out. Now, if you open your bottle tonight and you don't have that flare, it actually has the mushroom top, but then it has more of a straight, it doesn't flare out at the bottom. You know, there's a chance that it wasn't stored properly or that it's a little on the old side and your wine might be a little flatter than you'd expect.
Oh.
So just keep that in mind, because it might help you explain why your wine doesn't have a lot of bubbles just by looking at the cork.
But basically, your advice to Phil is either finish it yourselves or invite somebody over to help you.
Yeah, or if you can't, put it in the fridge. Definitely put it back in the fridge, because the cooler you keep it, the more the bubbles are going to be retained, because you don't have basically the higher temperatures are going to increase the release of those bubbles. So just put it back in and then drink it have mimosas the next morning, use it the next day for lunch. These are usually pretty low in alcohol, so you can have a glass and by then you should be fine. You know, it should be still fine.
Okay, great.
All right. Thanks, all right, Phil, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
And let's go to Jim in Baraboo. Hi, Jim.
Hi. So I have a question. And by the way, the solution to your previous caller's problem is just to transfer it to a 1 or 2 liter pop bottle, and then you can screw it tight and save it. But it's also nice to drink it all with your friends.
Yeah, and you have to be careful. Every time you pour it back and forth to something, it's like shaking that up and increasing the speed at which you release it. So what we would always do at the restaurants I worked at is just put it back. We actually had special closures for sparkling wine, but if we didn't, just put it back in the fridge with no top on. And that's almost better than putting it back and forth between different
shaking
things.
Shaking it up, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a question, Jim?
Yes, a lot of people, including me, get headaches from champagne.
Yeah, and there's...
Is it the sulfites that you'll find in wines that also... problems for people with champagne?
It depends. I would say a couple of things. Definitely, there's some theories out there that it's the carbonation that's the problem. But referring to sulfites with sparkling wine, I'll say a couple of things. One is, at the end of the process for a lot of sparkling wines, they add in sugar to create the style of sweetness they want. It'll still taste dry to us, but that sugar will balance the wine and make it taste not, you know, balanced. Mm-hmm. Whenever you add sugar to a wine, you have to protect it, because if there's any bit of yeast still in there, that yeast is going to eat it and create a secondary fermentation, which shouldn't matter too much because you already have a sparkling wine. But on the flip side of that, I will say that sparkling wines have an extremely low pH, especially if you get them from cool regions. So Champagne, Northern France, Washington, all those areas are very cool. And with a cool climate, typically the relationship is you get a low pH. At low pH, bacteria doesn't form quite as readily. And that's the reason why they're adding sulfates, is to protect against those bacteria. So the higher the quality and the cooler the region, the less likely you are to have a headache.
Unless you just drink way
too much. Yeah. And that, you know, and that's another thing with this champagne. It just goes down so easy. I think it's easy to sometimes drink a little bit more than we usually would. And so that might also be a problem. So, Jim, I would say, you know, it could be from the bubbles. It could be from the sulfates, definitely, because we're adding sugar to it. Or it could just be from a bit of overindulgence.
All right. Thanks for that call, Jim. And you have a plate of cheese here. And so I wanted to make sure that we talked about, you said that you would really encourage people to try champagne or sparkling wines more with meals. Are there particular foods that just really go well with sparkling wines?
Yes, definitely. Where do I start? Go ahead. You eat. I'll suggest some things. Definitely cheese is a great pairing. But also, like tonight, I'm doing a dinner. We're going to do oysters. Oysters go fantastically with champagne. Anything real salty is going to go really nicely. Anything you begin with. Grilled seafood goes really nicely. The thing is that there's all different styles of sparkling wine. So you can really find one that goes with almost any dish. Mm-hmm. The most common grapes that you're going to find in sparkling wines are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And so if you want a lighter early dish sparkling wine, you want to look for a sparkling wine that has more Chardonnay in it. It's going to be lighter, more acidic. It's going to go better with your fish dishes. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for something to actually go with a meat dish, then you look for something that has a lot more of the Pinot Noir, which gives it body. So the way to find that is on the label. You'll sometimes see Blanc de Noir. So Blanc, B-L-A-N-C, which is, you know, I don't know how to tell you. White from Noir, N-O-I-R-S. It's white wine from black grapes. Mm-hmm. So it's telling you this is a white wine made from only probably Pinot Noir or maybe Pinot Meunier. And what that does is it gives you body. So, and that's another thing I think that's interesting about champagnes is you can make a white champagne, a clear white champagne from red grapes.
Interesting.
Because we get all of our color from the skins
from
of
the skin, right.
And they remove the skins almost immediately. Oh, definitely immediately from the wines.
Well, there's so much more that we could talk about, but unfortunately we are out of time. So we'll thank Jessica Bell again for coming by. And I feel like we're going to be the smartest people at any get together we go to tonight, because you've given us so many interesting tidbits about.
We should tell them how many bubbles in a bottle.
Yes,
of champagne.
How many bubbles are in a
bottle? Well, the theory is 50 million bubbles. I know.
In a single bottle. Wow.
Yes.
Well, that explains how that cork can go flying if you're
not
careful.
So be careful tonight.
Wow.
Have fun.
Well, thank you, Jessica, so much for spending time with us. As always, a pleasure. Jessica Bell is the founder of My Wine School, based in Chicago and Milwaukee. You can find lots of great information and lots of fun activities at mywineschool.com. There is a link on the Facebook page. And I know, Jessica, you actually had looked for some local Wisconsin sparkling wines to share today and didn't have much luck. So we would love to have people share if they have a favorite local sparkling wine. Put that up on our website, or on our Facebook page, rather, The Larry Mueller Show, or send it to us at talk@WPR.org, and we will get it up there.
Great.
And then maybe next year we can feature all Wisconsin sparkling
wines. That would be fantastic.
Jessica, thank you so much.
Thanks, Judith. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year. And we are now going to turn to the weather guys. Steve Ackerman and John Martin are here to talk about the memorable weather and climate events of 2012 and look ahead a little bit to 2013. That's here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.